The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading from Smithsonian, the magazine of the Smithsonian Institution. Today's programming is underwritten with the generous support of Carl and Pat Kappen. We're reading today from the October 2020 edition of Smithsonian. Today's reading is Here It Is, and It Is Hungry. Grotesque and yet eerily beautiful, the invasive spotted lanternfly will devour nearly every tree and plant it comes across, from apple and cherry to wine grapes and hops. Scientists are racing to slow its spread. By Jeff McGregor. Every day the nurseryman rises and prays and walks the rows of his trees, redbud and sweet gum, choke cherry and crab apple, hornbeam and plum, maple, weeping willow, poplar, acerubum, salix alba tristis, Armstrong niobe, little volunteer. The names are an incantation. Here in the rose it's peaceful, just enough shade to ease the heat. There's birdsong and the breeze in the leaves, and you can hear your footsteps, one to the next, to the next. There's a creek down in the bottoms, and the place smells of flowers and sweet water and clean earth. If you look straight up, you see the blue sky. You feel the world fall away. It is a pretty place, but Don Eaton is in trouble, real trouble. Eaton Farms is surrounded. Don Eaton is a big man, a tall man, wide and high as a doorway. Late 50s, sandy hair and going gray. Big handshake, smart. Big ideas, big faith. Been a grower a long time, a born farmer. The footer on his emails nods to the Bible, the book of Luke. Keep your hand on the plow. He started this place with his father. Now he works the farm and the business with his wife Kathy and their 6 children, all of whom live near enough that the 16 grandchildren are around too, helping in the potting shed and whooping and chasing each other through the rows. Our average production schedule today is probably at 48 months, he says. That means I have to plant 4 crops before I get to sell the first one. So trees are capital intensive. It's a high-risk crop because there are threats, but the profit margin is there. Over my 35 years, I've watched the industry go from independent garden centers, who were and are still my customer base, to where 85% of the market is now with mass retailers. Eaton Farms does not sell to the big chains. In 2010, after the recession, Don saw a business opportunity. He used to grow what he describes as A to Z, shrubs to perennials and trees. That year, he explains, I went 100% trees and topiary as a strategic long-term move, which we're enjoying today. He also started Bauer and Branch, the family e-commerce enterprise. I told my kids, all 6, that are actually the owners now, that they shouldn't plant another tree unless they had a direct connection to retail customers. His daughter Laurel now manages Bauer and Branch. This is over in Leesport, Pennsylvania, southwest end of the Lehigh Valley, just up from Reading, not far from Philadelphia, Berks County, ground zero. They found the first spotted lanternfly on September 22, 2014, found it in Berks County, just a few miles from Eaton Farms. It's a day you don't forget. Dana Rhodes is the state plant regulatory official for the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. Our entomology team received a phone call from an employee with our game commission. They had heard us advise, if you see something unusual, give us a call. They noticed a smell and a lot of insects around some tree of heaven. 3 of our team went out there and found spotted lanternfly. Spotted lanternfly, La Corma de la Catula, ruinous and beautiful, the size of your thumb and a destroyer of worlds. Spotted wings, often a silvery blue-gray, a sort of iridescent gametal, with a bright red-orange flamenco petticoat beneath. In every stage, from nymph to adulthood, this is a stunning bug. Below-average flyers, but decent gliders and hoppers. To feed, they unfurl their mouth parts and penetrate the phloem, or vascular tissue, of the tree or vine. They drain nutrients from the plant and excrete sugar water. This they can do by the thousands or tens of thousands. Lanternfly feed most successfully on another invasive from Asia, Alanthus altissima, tree of heaven. Even in tony suburbs like Lower Merion outside Philadelphia, the bug covers the trees. Stand at the foot of a matured maple when lanternfly are feeding, and you'll be showered in honeydew, the sugar poop that destroys the forest floor, the understory with reeking sooty mold stinking of vinegar and molasses. Lanternfly can kill a tree outright, or stress it to the point where it dies over time. Same for hops and grapevines and fruit trees, billion-dollar cash crops. Like locust or the European gypsy moth, spotted lanternfly is a genuine threat. Since its introduction to the United States in 1869 as part of a scheme to increase silk production here, the gypsy moth has defoliated tens of millions of acres of American forest. In 1989 alone, it stripped bare over 12 million acres in the Northeast, and while most hardwood trees bounce back, even after a major infestation, many are weakened, made susceptible to disease, and eventually die. From destruction caused by foliage feeders like the gypsy moth to tunneling insects like the emerald ash borer, losses to cash crop forests already run in excess of $2 billion a year in the United States. Costs to residential landscaping and property values are also climbing. In fact, the spread of pests and pathogens damaging plant life could cost global agriculture $540 billion a year. U.S. farm output alone is a more than $300 billion a year business. Whether you're talking about the Asian longhorn beetle, diamondback moth, or more than 1,000 species of termite, the cost and effort to mitigate and repair the damage they cause is astronomical. The U.S. Department of Agriculture pest management budget is north of $1 billion a year, some of which goes to the USDA Integrated Pest Management Program, which encompasses research universities, extension services, and county agents. There's a worldwide battle being fought in silence from one end of the planet to the other. Make no mistake, this is war. Gypsy moths blanket New England. Copra beetle, a grain eater as devastating as any in history, is being seen more and more in warm weather climates, from Arizona and New Mexico to Oklahoma and Texas. Spotted lanternfly is so far found mostly in a relatively narrow band concentrated in the mid-Atlantic. And here's just a partial list of the trees spotted lanternfly might feed upon: almonds, apples, apricots, cherries, maple, oak, pine, nectarines, peaches, plums, poplar, sycamore, walnut, willow, and on and on and on. More than 70 possible food sources have been identified so far. And we still don't know everything on the lanternfly menu, but we know some of the a la carte prices. Apples. In 2018, the United States produced 10.2 billion pounds of apples, making the crop a $2.9 billion a year business. Hops. $600 million a year. Grapes, valued at a whopping $6 billion annually. Lanternfly, they'll lay waste to a whole sector of your economy, then lay eggs in your Christmas tree. The original gangster. Read across the warnings and alerts from Georgia to Tennessee to Wisconsin, and the news is the same. Be vigilant. We don't know enough about the bug, But what we do know is chilling for ag-based businesses, not only in Pennsylvania, but every corner of America. Lanternfly is a detective thriller and a horror show, a stranger in the darkness. Maybe they got here on a load of decorative stone from China. That's the story you hear, but no one knows for sure. They invaded South Korea a few years ago. Entomologists are in the woods right now trying to learn how to fight a pest we know too little about, researching defenses like circle traps and sticky bands, which are exactly what they sound like, working on the life cycle of the bug and how it moves from one food source to another as it ages, studying lures and bait trees that might draw a lanternfly off the grapevines and out of the orchards, looking for the natural enemies preying on lanternfly, of which there are too few in North America. There's a promising fungus that makes a zombie of lanternfly, takes over its brain, tells it to climb to the top of a tree, then binds it there to send out the fungus's own spores. But it needs to be studied. I'm out there every week talking to growers, says Heather Leach, an entomologist at Penn State. Inevitably, somebody asks, what's new? Is there anything else I can spray? What have you figured out? They're really stuck between a rock and a hard place right now. Homeowners, she says, are a major story. The lanternfly poses a major threat to everyone's backyard trees and gardens, getting sugary poop dropped down on their cars, getting insects crawling into their house if they're on the back patio door. These are the first ominous signs, so Leach and her colleagues have set up a lanternfly call center. No one is sure how many lanternflies there are in Pennsylvania right now, or where they are, a billion or more. You can kill them with pesticides, but you have to find them first. Leach spends hundreds of hours on the road going from grower to grower, and test site to test site. In between, she delivers educational talks to the public. Awareness is a weapon, the first line of defense. She works with Julie Urban, whose office and lab are back at Penn State. Julie is an associate research professor in the Department of Entomology, specializing in plant hoppers. How much more does Urban know about the bug than she did 5 years ago? A lot, she says, as nymphs, they'll spread out and eat really anything. Has to be tender, herbaceous. She also knows them as fourth instars, the red stage. They tend to move on to woodier things, black walnut, tree of heaven. If those favored targets are not around, they'll continue on to something else. It was 2017, Urban recalls, when she first observed how big the population was. We kept seeing things that would just make your stomach drop. It was that much worse than we thought. She and her graduate students recorded the mass attacks on video. In one vineyard they had been monitoring, lanternfly had been hanging out on the grapes. We'd been working in that vineyard for the past 2 years. And there's apple in that same orchard. And they never were on the apple, ever. That's when they started flying around, and people reported swarming behavior. They're flying into the Walmart, grad student Erica Smyers called Urban. They're on the apple, Smyers reported. They're hitting my car. Urban drove to the scene. They're covering apple trees, feeding as they go, Urban remembers. Urban oversees a lab where she's trying to grow enough lanternfly to study. Because of the insect's relatively slow reproductive cycle and the difficulty of keeping them fed, even breeding for experimentation has proved difficult. She's part of what has become a humming nationwide network of entomologists and departments of agriculture, universities and state resource management offices, lumber operations and hops growers, vineyards and vintners, nurseries and tree services, orchardists, foresters, gardeners, and farmers. In a way, this is the Lanternfly Manhattan Project. Alex J. Rowland runs Penn State's Lanternfly call center. 10 operators sit in carrels taking incoming reports from citizens around the state. Average day, right now, we're at 50 calls, and it's 11:30, Rowland says. That's pretty average. We do have crazier days, 6 people on the line with 3-4 backed up in queue. That's a heavy day. How many calls a week? Roughly 1,000 a week. Fluctuates anywhere from 500. We had 1,400 one week. The calls range from the short and sweet, people who already know that they have lanternfly and want to report updates so the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture gets current information. 3, maybe 4 minutes. For people who have never seen them before, longer calls, wanting to know what the best pesticides are, what damage the insects might do to the house, what crops are at risk, what this could mean for property values. Martin Kubek grows grapes on a hillside in Lower Milford, Pennsylvania, 175 miles to the east. Hobby operation, maybe an acre and a half. Picturesque, tidy, Kubek has done a crazy thing. He has invited Penn State to put lanternfly on some of his vines. Somebody's got to do something, he says. Here we have an invasive species that could destroy all grapes in the eastern U.S. And what are we doing about it? Kubek decides to offer his grapes, some Riesling that I'm not crazy about, as a test plot. So in the neat rows of leafing plants, more than a dozen mesh enclosures hold different numbers of lanternfly on individual grapevines. 40 here, 200 there. This to find out how many insects it takes to damage a plant or destroy it. At the base of each plant, a sensitive electronic dendrometer has been installed to measure the bug's destructive drain on the interior pressure of the plant. Healthy plants not only draw moisture and nutrition up from the soil, but send nutrients down to their own roots across the growing season. Lanternfly interrupt this cycle, as they do in trees, by tapping into the plant's plumbing. This can kill a plant outright, or leave it so stressed and wounded that it can no longer produce fruit. To replace a grapevine means a grower might have to wait 5 extra years before the new vine makes cash quality wine, or 3 years for table grapes. Every dead plant may represent a half decade loss to the bottom line. While visiting Kubek one day, Leach was asked by a local newspaper to characterize grape growers' lanternfly concerns. They're extremely terrified, she says. Forests blanket the green hills of the Lehigh Valley, crosshatched by a patchwork of vineyards and wineries. Talk to John Lannis, gray-haired and serious, over at Vinecrest, who lost many productive plants to lanternfly last year and expects to lose more this year. They come out of the tree line in clouds and settle on his grapevines until the black mold is thick on the ground. And it gets worse as the humidity rises. Or Rich Blair up at Setter Ridge Vineyards, where the bugs are so dense they drive the customers off the patio. They're sucking the life out of my vines, he says, looking you straight in the eye. You hear that phrase again and again, sucking the life out of the vines. Over the hill, Calvin Beekman lost something like 40 acres of grapes, and people talk about him now in whispers. Lanternfly is a threat to every ag business in Pennsylvania. Laurel Eaton Kipley knows this all too well. At first, she says, the family put in place a labor-intensive inspection and treatment process. We had to touch every tree multiple times. We had a checklist system. The orders were getting pulled, and we would inspect for lanternfly and remove them. We would bring the trees to a staging area and do a spray on the order. Then we wouldn't touch the order for 24 hours, and then we would inspect it. I think 2 more times after that to make sure we weren't sending anything out. Then the deluge. All of a sudden, she recalls, we're seeing bugs falling out of the sky and hitting the windows and collecting on door frames and on the maple trees. The Eatons devised a lanternfly protocol they have shared with other nurseries. They offer field-tested advice. This is what worked for us, this rotating schedule of pesticides, Kepley explains. For several years now, the Eatons have avoided a toxic option, neonicotinoids, a more effective class of pesticide, but environmentally damaging. Kills the bees and everything, she says. The grape industry, she acknowledges, has it even worse. I read stories of them losing entire crops. We can spray 24 hours before we put a tree shipment on a truck. On the grapes, it's a bigger window that they have to stop spraying before they harvest. Even so, fending off the lanternfly has taken its toll, Kepley says. It has been stressful. There's this constant threat of states shutting us down by not allowing us to ship into their state, which they can do. We cannot let a live or dead spotted lanternfly get through. It's very disheartening and exhausting. We have to stop our lives and just make up whole new protocols, spray schedules, pest management schedules, and more paperwork and record keeping. We have to keep records for trees that are inspected, I think for 3 years. It's just making business a lot more difficult. It makes you pause and say, is this worth the fight anymore? Or should we just give up and walk away? Don Eaton insists that the family can beat the lanternfly invasion. My dad is an eternal optimist, Kepley says. He sees opportunity everywhere. We're going to push through and make up a protocol. Empower other nurseries to be ready to deal with this. There's more at stake for Don Eaton than money. Not only profit and loss, but stewardship, a renewal of balance and restoration of a natural order. He's partnered the farm with the Audubon Society to restore native trees to the landscape, and with them, native birds. My job may be to make people aware that we may be out of balance, and we are part of the balance. Still, he admits, costs are mounting as he fights the lanternfly. I estimate last year maybe $150,000 of real cost put to the pest. Last year I lost maybe $500,000 to customers who were afraid to buy from us because of our location. Eaton was already beginning to think the unthinkable, closing the family nursery business. Then COVID-19 struck. Our customer base, independent garden centers, are located in New Jersey, New York, and Massachusetts, he says. All of them at the center of COVID had to close down. We lost 30% of our pre-bookings. New business coming in from March, April, and May, 10% of normal. The Lehigh Valley is a transit hub for the entire eastern seaboard, a tangle of interstates leading to other interstates that carry freight from Maine to the Carolinas. Stand in a hillside vineyard anywhere on the Lehigh Valley wine trail, look down and you'll see mile after mile of warehouses and fulfillment centers, transshipment yards, and truck lots. As this article goes to press, spotted lanternfly infestations have been found in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, Virginia, West Virginia, and Maryland. Internal quarantines have been instituted in most effective areas. The wall goes up. But there's Tree of Heaven along almost every highway and railway in America. The lanternfly egg mass can be cemented to anything, and the living bug can hitch a ride on everything moving, trucks, trains, ships, cars, airplanes. Ethan Angel is field operations manager for the Division of Plant Industry at the New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets. In 2018, Angel and his colleagues partnered with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to develop a response plan to prepare New York if and when spotted lanternfly arrives. One of the things that we learned from Pennsylvania is that the public was very good at recognizing spotted lanternfly, he says. New York also instituted checkpoints for trucks coming into the state from areas where lantern fly has been documented. That gave us an additional tool to try and prevent spotted lantern fly from entry. Amy Stone is an agriculture and natural resources extension educator with Ohio State University. She's up in Toledo and has been working with a group fighting the emerald ash borer invasion in Ohio since 2002. She's getting ready. We have a Great Lakes early detection app that we have been promoting for people to report invasive species, she says. Now we are trying to really ramp that up. They're asking people to report locations of Tree of Heaven. Those data points will become sites that researchers will scout and monitor. Any citizen in Ohio can participate, where they adopt an elanthus and weekly go out and visit that tree, looking for signs and symptoms of the spotted lantern fly. Do you have confirmed lantern fly in Ohio yet? We do not. Jumping ahead now due to time constraints, the nightmare scenario, of course, is that the bug would start to show up in California. The $50 billion a year engine of American agriculture and one of the world's greatest wineries. That's the last 15 minutes of the horror movie. How it turns out is up to us, because for a gifted hitchhiker like Lanternfly, the question is not really if, but when. Nick Kondos is Division Director of the Plant Health and Pest Prevention Services Division in the California Department of Food and Agriculture. I don't know if you've ever driven into California, but we have border protection stations. We are screening passenger vehicles and commercial shipments, he says. The spotted lanternfly has been on our radar for several years now. Fortunately, it's also in a part of the country where the gypsy moth is endemic. There is a national policy in place to prevent the movement of gypsy moth. Spotted lanternfly lays its eggs on very similar things that the gypsy moth will lay its eggs on. We already had some built-in protection because of the existing gypsy moth quarantine. That's been very beneficial. What that amounts to is a pretty good approach for keeping the lanternfly out. No other state can do that, Kondo says. We're unique in that regard. We have a pest prevention system in place designed to protect us from pests that we don't even know are pests yet, and pests that we know are pests. He's well aware, too, that California faces a dual-entry challenge. If the front door is our international ports and the back door is our land borders with other states, it can still come in through the front door because it's endemic to Asia. Obviously, we're the gateway to trade with Asia. I worry that it could come from Asia or that it's already here. And we couldn't quite finish that due to time. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading of Smithsonian. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Frank Urban, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's programming is underwritten with the generous support of Carl and Pat Kappen. We thank them for their support. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long. Address any comments or questions to us at 919-832-5138.